Iambic Audiobooks presents Bearded Women by Teresa Milbrot, read by Darla Middlebrook. Chapter 1. Bianca's Body. My second lower torso grows out 2 inches to the left of my navel. I call her Bianca. She is at a 45-degree angle to my body and an 80-degree angle to the ground. When I sit down, part of her back rests on my left knee and her legs dangle off the ground. Bianca has her own navel, a crotch, the necessary reproductive organs, and a nice pair of legs. I can move them when I concentrate. She is 29 inches long, and if she were a whole person, I figure she would have been short, maybe 4 feet tall. I don't know how much she weighs. It's hard to balance her on a scale, but I'd guess 45 pounds. Her hips are a bit narrow. Bianca wears pants and skirts. I have to buy 2 of everything so she matches my walking legs, but I don't bother with pantyhose or matching shoes. Bianca wears black flats because they go with everything. Over 35 years, I've grown accustomed to the extra pull on my abdomen, but I have a little rolling cart I rest Bianca on when I'm walking, push it with my left hand like a baby stroller. It is our 3rd trip to this gynecologist, the 7th Doug and I have seen. In the office, my husband sits on my right, holds my hand. Bianca is supported on a stool to my left. Doug still smells of French fry grease from working the graveyard shift at the diner. I picked him up after I got off work at the television station, have dark crescents below my eyes because I've been up for 17 hours since 5 yesterday afternoon. I do the 11 o'clock news as well as the 5 a.m. broadcast. Our newscasts have the best ratings in the state for a market our size, about 500,000 people. The station manager keeps telling me it's because of my bright personality and clear speaking voice, not because Bianca is hidden under the table. I think you'll need to have it removed if you want to have a child, says the gynecologist. Removal would take the stress of extra weight from your body and improve blood circulation and probably fertility. I wouldn't have advised it 10 or even 5 years earlier, but medical technologies have been improving at such a rapid pace that your risk of serious complications has dramatically decreased. But there is still risk, says Doug. I lay my hand on Bianca's stomach. We've been having this problem for 6 years, ever since we started trying to get pregnant. Doug prefers to have sex with Bianca, and for a long time, I did not mind this. I feel what Bianca feels, and to be honest, she has better orgasms. Bianca has gotten pregnant 2 times, and 2 times the fetus miscarried. For 2 years, we've tried impregnating my walking half. It's not easy, since Bianca grows out of my body at a diagonal. She gets in the way if Doug tries to lie on top of me, or if I'm on top of him. The necessary parts can't quite reach. We've tried all sorts of alternate positions, none of them comfortable. The one that's worked best so far is when I squat over Doug and move up and down while he thrusts. Bianca has to put her legs on the mattress and bow out her torso. It strains her muscles after a while. But it wouldn't be so bad if my walking half didn't take forever to orgasm. Sex with Bianca is better, easier than with my walking half, even though we have to do it standing, often in the shower. Doug hugs me close to him. I wrap Bianca's legs around his waist, and he supports her with both arms so my side doesn't ache. It works well enough. But this gynecologist sings the same song as her 6 predecessors. Bianca will never be able to bear children because of complications with her uterus. It will always reject the embryo shortly after implantation. If she is removed, there is a greater chance my walking half will be able to become pregnant. The gynecologist explains this in terms of hormone concentrations. I don't quite understand it, but she seems to suggest that Bianca is leaching estrogen and progesterone away from the rest of my body. I've been injected with hormones and it hasn't worked. But all the doctors say things would balance out if Bianca were removed. So I would be able to get pregnant, I say. There would be a greater chance, says the gynecologist.
But just a chance, says Doug. You couldn't guarantee anything.
If it didn't work, we could try artificial insemination, says the gynecologist.
Just a chance, says Doug.
A chance? I try to smile.
They're a bunch of quacks, Doug says in the car on the way home. They've never dealt with anything like this. They have no idea what would happen if you got it removed.
They have a pretty good idea, I say. He doesn't know her name is Bianca. No one else does.
They're still quacks, says Doug.
I don't want you going under the knife and putting yourself at risk for the sake of a baby. We can adopt.
I don't want to, I say quietly.
Why the hell not? He says, though we have had this argument before.
There are lots of kids out there who need good parents.
Those doctors are vultures. Do you have any idea how much this will cost? How it'll put them in the news? You're a famous face.
Locally, just locally.
It doesn't matter, he says. It would still be in press releases all over the country. I don't see why you need to do this whole pregnancy thing. Having a kid is so taxing on a woman's body, and you'll be taxed enough after having surgery. What if they go in there and botch things up with your other uterus? Or what if you still can't have kids, even with it off?
I haven't decided to remove it yet, I say. I don't know if I want to try.
You shouldn't, says Doug.
What would I do if I lost you?
We lapse into silence. I don't know who to believe. The doctors, my husband, everyone has an agenda. I know the doctors would be celebrities. I know Doug is afraid for my health. I also think he's afraid of losing Bianca. Sometimes I get jealous. Bianca is sexier than my walking half. Her legs and hips are smooth and slender, belonging to a 20-year-old girl, while my walking legs belong to a 35-year-old woman. Even though I work out at the gym and my walking legs are muscular, there is a little cellulite and some varicose veins. I align myself more with my walking half. I don't know why. I wouldn't have to alter all my clothes, make slits in skirts and pants to accommodate her. I wouldn't have to stand leaning over a toilet while Bianca does her business. We wouldn't have to keep ordering special cars with the steering wheel on the right side so I have room for Bianca's body. I wouldn't have a near constant strain on my left side. In the car, I touch Doug's hand and he doesn't pull away. It is difficult to explain to him why I want a child of my own. It is difficult to explain it to myself, why I feel a need to grow round with the weight of an infant, why I want my body to create another body. I keep trying to come up with reasons, but wonder why I have to explain myself to anybody. I always wanted to have a baby, and I wanted to be in my 30s when I did it, have a career, and be able to take time off. Sometimes I think my drive to conceive has become stronger the more problems we have encountered, the more gynecologists we have seen. My body should be able to reproduce. I have all the right equipment, 2 sets, in fact, but neither works. By the time Doug and I get home, I'm confused and hungry and not a little cross. Bianca and my walking legs have the same menstrual cycle, and it's getting close to their time of the month.
It's crazy trying to change Bianca's pad and my walking half's pad in a little restroom stall, even when I use the wheelchair access once. Doug and I eat cereal at 11 in the morning, too tired to make anything else for breakfast. I keep a little stool beside the kitchen table so I can rest to Bianca while I eat. We need to catch a few hours' rest, have to get up at 8 in the evening, and by the time we've sorted through the mail and had our cereal, it's past noon. We're both tired and irksome. The appointment, the infertility, the possibility of Bianca's removal is still on my mind. Even though I know it's a bad idea, I want to have sex. "Can I just do it with your extra parts?" Doug sighs. "We have to use my walking legs," I say. "Too early in the morning for that," he grumbles. "Maybe this time it will work, and the hormone shots will finally kick in." So we end up on the bed. Me kneeling over Doug, Bianca arching her lower back and legs with her feet on the mattress, Doug grimacing up at me the whole time. It takes twice as long as usual before he comes. I fall off of him to the side, hoping to catch it all and clamp it inside me. "Become a baby, damn it." Bianca pulls at my side, her legs flailing in the air. "Feel better now?" he says. "Sure." We go to sleep, get up at 7:30, later than we should, have just enough time to shower and dress and make dinner before heading off to work. Doug and I met because we were nocturnal creatures. I was in college, a sophomore, majoring in communications, and he worked at the all-night diner where I went to study. At first, he gave me free coffee when he saw me sitting at the counter or alone at a table. That progressed to donuts, pie, milkshakes if I wanted them, then burgers and fries, and even breakfast at 5 a.m. In the meantime, I was being prodded into a career in newscasting. I always thought I'd like to work in television, but never pictured myself in front of the camera, for obvious reasons. I figured I would do things behind the scenes, but ended up sitting at a news desk when no one else in my camera-shy television production class wanted to anchor the newscast for our campus station. It was only a half-hour broadcast, aired twice a week, and focused on local and university news. The other students convinced me it would be fine. Bianca would remain hidden, her feet balanced on a milk crate. I worked for the campus station for 5 years, even after graduation. Viewership to our program increased tenfold, and we expanded to a 3-day-a-week and then a 5-day-a-week show, with me as the primary news anchor. I applied for my current job on a lark. They didn't know about the extra body when I was hired, because I sent broadcast demo tapes and did a phone interview. I figured only the upper half of my body would be important to them anyway. I've had the job for 12 years now, and think most viewers know about Bianca, even though it's just my upper half on the billboards all over town. Sometimes, though, when I'm at the grocery store or out to eat, someone smiles at me, gives a wave of recognition, and then her jaw drops when she sees Bianca. The evening newscast is the same as usual. House fires, a gas station robbed, a dog that had 12 puppies and someone assumes it must be a county record. Overnight, I'm working on more national and local news developments for the morning broadcast. During a coffee break at 2 a.m., I make the mistake of telling Lottie, the night receptionist, that I'm considering having Bianca removed. She says her lips are sealed. By 5 in the morning, half the station knows. Lottie swears up and down. She only told one other person. I want to strangle her. After my morning broadcast, the station program manager asks if they can do a special on the operation and my recovery. "But this isn't a done deal," I say. "I don't know if I'm getting the surgery."
"Really?"
He scratches his mustache.
"I think an extra bottom half would be more trouble than it's worth."
"It's dangerous to have it removed," I say before marching out to the parking lot. Everyone always asks why I don't get Bianca cut off. I tell them our internal organs are mingled, which is true enough, but so many other things are mingled too. I have always sensed her sexual desire. It is something instinctual, gut-level thinking. I don't know how I would feel without her. Maybe lost. I've read about this happening with Siamese twins when they were separated. How they spent so long feeling what the other twin felt. It was a near devastating absence when that connection was gone. Bianca has always been more passionate than me. If I lost her, lost that, what else might change? Beside my car in the parking lot, I'm approached by a nice-looking man in a trench coat. He hands me a business card and asks if he can buy toenail clippings from Bianca. "I'll pay a premium for them," he whispers not unkindly.
"More if I could watch you cut them, but just the toenails would be okay as well."
I stare at him. He smiles, tells me to think about it, touches the brim of his hat. I get into my car quickly and lock the door, sit in the driver's seat for a moment. His business card says he's an accountant. I wonder how he would know which body I sent the clippings from, if they were my toenails at all. There are always a few odd ducks wandering around the studio trying to catch a glimpse of me. There are often a few protesters, too. People who say the only reason I've had this job for 12 years is because of my body. Because I am a secret spectacle. If it were 70 years ago, I could be exhibiting myself in a sideshow, painted larger than life on a poster on the side of a canvas tent. Freakish people used to be thought of as magical. Bianca could have been an economic asset. Now I'm just made to feel bad. When Doug and I got married, both our families were aghast. My mother did not want me to wed someone who planned on a career as a short order cook, no matter how well read I said he was. Doug's mother was sure we were going to have kids with three arms. Doug and I had been dating for 2 years. Our parents met twice before the wedding to have dinner, meals that involved several pointed questions and long periods of silence. His mother asked my mother when I was going to get the extra bits removed. My mother asked his mother when Doug was going back to school. I will never be sure why we didn't elope, why I let my mother insist on a church wedding. I don't think anyone in his family said anything to anyone in my family the entire evening. But I loved Doug because he was a smart person, because we both liked traveling, because he was happy cooking and working nights and reading private eye novels. He didn't mind that we would need to follow my news anchor career, go where I could find work, and he was proud that I had the confidence to keep Bianca. I'd known that I needed to marry a man who saw Bianca as part of me, not something extra. And maybe that plan worked too well. I was planning on going to the gym, and after the accountant incident, I really needed to work out, relieve some of the stress. They're used to me at Perfect Body Gym. Appreciate that I can bring people in at 6:30 in the morning. I have a free membership as long as I come in at least twice a week. They keep a little stool for Bianca behind the desk, one with a seat I can raise or lower depending on the equipment I'm using. I do some curls, work on my triceps, and do a few sets on the leg extension machine with my walking half. Then I take Bianca's shoes off, place her bare feet against the wall, and lean all of my weight against her. I bend her knees and straighten them again. It's kind of like doing sideways push-ups. Keeps her legs and ass toned. Of course, people are always looking at me, whispering behind my back, and over time I've learned to tell myself that I don't care that much. I get home at 8 in the morning, feeling tired, but a bit better. Doug has been home for an hour at least, made us eggs and bacon and toast. The station manager called, he says, squinting at me across the table. It was about doing a show on you, some sort of special. He wanted to talk to you about it. I tell one person at work about the possibility of an operation, and now it's front page news. I shake my head. I'm still not sure about it.
You're not? He says.
No, I don't know. There's the safety risk and I don't know.
But that afternoon I call the gynecologist. Figure I might as well start going through pre-surgery procedures just in case. I don't even know which organs are connected where, how they would have to untwist my genitals from Bianca's. While I am on the phone to the gynecologist's office, I wonder how long Bianca could live on her own apart from me. Would it be seconds? Minutes? Hours? Nothing? At dinner, I tell Doug I decided to start preliminary testing but haven't committed to anything. He's mad anyway.
They're going to hook you, he says. Once you start down that road, even if you're not sure, they'll force you into it one way or another. Those doctors will lie, tell you it will be easy, even if it won't.
It's still my decision, I say, mad at him for thinking I can be forced into anything. I can say no. It's my body, and I get to decide what to do with it. It's my body that may conceive a baby. It's my body to detach from Bianca if I so choose. Sometimes I get tired of making allowances for her. But when I lie awake at night, I wonder what is mine and what is Bianca's. Are my breasts her breasts? Is my head her head? Our head? How much does she exist as me, and how much is she her own being? I know chickens are supposed to run around for a few minutes after they have their heads cut off. They say it's a muscle reaction, but I've always thought the chicken was still bent on trying to get away. And what is the head on the chopping block thinking, once it's independent of the chicken, watching its body in a futile sprint? If the body is still moving, what of the mind? Doug and I barely talk for a week, just argue. He's mad, says I'm going to needlessly put my life at risk, and he refuses to have sex with my walking half. He just wants Bianca.
Those parts won't be with us much longer, he slathers his toast with strawberry jam. Might as well make use of them while they're here.
But it's a waste of good sperm, I say. Until I get pregnant, it should all go into my walking half. The extra parts could stay if I conceived, and I'm still not sure if I'm going through with it.
My argument fails to sway my husband, and he sleeps on the couch for 4 nights. When he comes back to bed, he's still mad, but mad in a sex-deprived way. We try to figure out a truce. He can have sex with Bianca one night and my walking half the other night. Doug seems okay with this compromise, but grimaces when he's under me.
You could at least look like you're enjoying it, I say. He smiles a big, fake smile.
I sigh because I'm not enjoying it either.
When he has sex with Bianca, it's rougher than before. He thrusts harder, slaps her rear. I wince, tell him to slow down and be gentle. He kind of blushes.
We change our strategy. Doug starts out with Bianca, enough to get him excited. Then he lies down on the bed and I clamber on top of him while he struggles to hold the juice in. This works a couple of times, but involves a lot of bumped knees and shins. In the end, he's still more turned on by Bianca than my walking half. And this is hurtful, though I don't want to admit it. When I go to have more tests, CAT scans and such, Doug shows his anger in other, smaller ways. He doesn't always kiss me when we leave for work in the afternoon and get home in the morning. He starts doing overtime at the diner, working on weekends, until 10 or 11 in the morning. He says if I want this surgery and we want a child, we need to save money. I bite my lip and nod. Bianca's wrath is an even bigger problem. She knows what I am considering, and during the 8 weeks of pre-surgery testing, I have two of the most painful periods ever. Bianca bloats, and it's hard to zip up her pants. I try to reason with her. I'm just checking out options, I say while driving to the hospital for another scan. This is no done deal. Her hips, her ovaries, her vagina are searing pain. I grit my teeth. all of Bianca hurts, even her knees and feet. I don't know what to do. Part of me worries that even after she is removed, the pain will still be there. I've heard stories of war veterans who lost hands and feet, but could still feel pain in the absence. A phantom limb seems paltry compared to a phantom lower half. Protesters are massed every day outside of the television station. They picket, carrying signs with black outlines of people with four arms and three legs. Say I shouldn't be allowed to procreate at all, regardless of surgery. They believe the abnormalities are hereditary and I'll only birth monsters. Of course, I know it's not true, but it hurts to know they think my body isn't fit to produce another. Word also gets out to the local papers, and editorial page letters are devoted to me for 3 weeks. Some people say I should get the surgery. Some people say I shouldn't get the surgery. The really whacked ones say I should have been killed at birth. The station manager is mad because I told him I wouldn't do a television special whether or not I get the surgery done. He thinks I should jump at the chance for local and national and even international press. Think of the fame you'd gain if the surgery were successful and you could conceive, he says. If my husband will still have me, I mutter. The station manager ignores me, says it would be a great career move. After 3 months of hassles and tests, I'm more resolute about having the operation than I was before. The gynecologist says even though it will take me a long time to recover, the procedure itself will be easier than expected. Bianca's liver and kidneys and intestines function separately from mine and won't be as difficult to detach as they thought. Of course, Doug and Bianca don't want me to have surgery. Even the station manager has changed his mind since I refused to do the television special, says it would be best if I just deliberate forever to keep it in the news. Then, Bianca doesn't have her period when my walking half does. I wait a week. Two. At the beginning of the third week, I feel a little sick in the evening after I wake up. I think I'm pregnant, I whisper to Doug at dinner. Both of us are wide-eyed, as if saying it any louder will make it not true. He hugs me tight, and we both hold our breath. I squeeze Bianca's legs tight to keep the baby inside, keep it growing. I don't talk about surgery for days, and Doug seems cheery, even though he has to have sex with my walking half because we don't want to disturb Bianca. The fetus miscarries after 6 weeks. I sit on the edge of the bathtub, naked from the waist down, my nightgown hitched up over Bianca. I grip her bloody underwear in both hands and cry. This is how Doug finds me. He sits beside me, wraps his arms around my shoulders, rocks Bianca and me back and forth. We could always adopt, he whispers. I cry harder. I want a baby from my body, yet I'm afraid that even without Bianca, I won't be able to carry a child to term. What if this pregnancy is Bianca trying to stay with me, trying to conceive to pacify me? I want to keep Bianca. I want to have a baby. I can't have both. The accountant in the parking lot is still asking for toenail clippings. I see him once a week. Everywhere I go, people are watching me. I can feel their prying eyes. Before my possible surgery made news, it seemed like people had almost gotten used to Bianca, or at least everyone everywhere didn't gape. Now at the gym, I think a few dozen people have bought memberships just to watch me work out. They walk on treadmills going 1.5 miles an hour and stare as Bianca does her deep knee bends against the wall. The television ratings are up. Haven't been this high since I joined the station. Doug convinces me to let him have sex with Bianca 2 days after the miscarriage. He says the pregnancy is a sign that we should keep trying and prove the gynecologists wrong. Bianca shudders pleasure when he touches her, as if she'd been worried Doug would no longer find her attractive after the miscarriage. He caresses her with a gentleness that is somehow unlike the way he touches my walking legs. I sear with jealousy. I know he sees her as part of me, but how can he understand that she is and she isn't? I feel the hot waves of her orgasm that is mine and not mine. When I start crying, Doug hugs me, and all I can do is shake my head. After Doug has fallen asleep, I talk to Bianca. I tell her that part of her essence would still be with me, even after she was removed. The blood in my body would have run through both of our bodies. She would be a mother along with me. In the back of my mind, I wonder wistfully if Doug would leave me if I had the surgery. How to explain to him that she would still be there, a phantom pull at my side. In sleep, Doug slides his arm over my stomach and across to Bianca, his fingers grazing both of our hips. I wiggle Bianca's toes and wonder what it would be like without her. How long it would take to forget the feel of her legs against bedsheets, Doug's hand on her knee. I grit my teeth, close my eyes, concentrate on wiggling the toes on my walking legs, the ones I know are mine.